Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow morning. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We have a fantastic interview for you guys today. Cole Zwicker, writer and co-founder of The Step In. He has all the college basketball analysis you need. So anybody you're thinking about in this NBA draft, we've touched on everybody in this conversation. So this is a loaded college basketball NBA draft episode for you with Cole Zwicker. Quickly, before we get to that interview, just wanted to remind everybody that we do have a new text and voicemail line set up. That number is 331-979-1369. You can leave us text and voicemails while you're listening to the show, and we'd love for you to do that. We've already had a boatload of text messages and voicemails being left for us. We're going to play the best voicemails of the week once a week on this show. So if you feel so inclined, you're watching a Bulls game, you have a rant to talk about, or you have a question that you want to ask us, send us a voicemail or simply send us a text while you listen to the show. We'd love to hear the feedback from you guys, as well as your opinions and your thoughts on the show as well. Without further ado, here is Cole Zwicker, writer and co-founder of The Steppin'. All right, now we're pleased to welcome on to Locked On Bulls for the very first time Cole Zwicker. He is a writer at The Steppin', covers college basketball and the NBA. Cole, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. It's a fun time of year, almost the NCAA tournament. I finally get to watch some NBA coming up, so that's always fun.
Well, unfortunately for me, the Big Ten tournament, which was one of the biggest mistakes that they ever made, was to decide to play the Big Ten tournament a week earlier and ahead of all of these other tournaments. Obviously, last night didn't go too well either for my favorite team in Indiana. They lost to Rutgers. So, but this is definitely a fun time. We brought Cole on because we want to talk about all the NBA prospects that are going to be headed into this draft. Obviously, a huge draft for the Chicago Bulls here. Let's start at the top, and then I want to get into some of the later picks that you might think are underrated right now, names that we may never have heard of, or the fans out there have never heard of, and then kind of dive into those guys and see how guys are rising up the board. So talk to me really quickly. If you had to pick between three of these guys in this draft coming up, obviously some things have shifted. Who are the three guys that you bet that you can say for sure that you would bet on to become NBA stars, or guys that can be franchise changing players for the NBA?
First of all, Luka Doncic, I think that his equity as a lead ball handler is pretty underrated, as far as he's a 6'8 guy who can shoot off the dribble. You have to chase him over the top of screens, and he's one of the best passers I've ever seen. I think his athleticism is a little bit better than he gets credit for. And we're talking about a guy, again, who's 6'8. He's a good team defender, so he's not going to take a lot off the table defensively. You don't see a lot of guys his age. We've never seen anybody his age internationally who's produced the way he has at in the second best league in the world. So I would bet on Luka first. Second would be Jaren Jackson Jr., just because I think that he is one of the most advanced defensive players I've seen for a big coming out of college. He is Anthony Davis-esque in that way, as far as his ability to protect the rim. He has incredible instincts. He overhelps. He challenges basically everything at the basket. He's a two-level defensive player, so he can guard the perimeter, and he has high team defense IQ. It just comes down to, does the shot translate? I think it will. He's got a little bit more off the bounce as well, as far as face up ability that he hasn't been able to show because he's the fourth or fifth option on Michigan State. So Jaren Jackson would be second. And I'm still going to hang with Trey Young for now. I think that his advanced passing instincts, he's one of the best passers that's coming into the draft in some time for a point guard. He has the hit ahead passes that Lonzo has, really high IQ, drive and kick vision. The pull up shooting is dynamic as well. I know the percentages have dropped off. I just think he's really fatigued right now with his usage being, I think, 39%, which is one of the highest rates we've ever seen from a point guard that's a freshman. So that's pretty unprecedented what he's doing as well. I have not soured on him to the level that other people have, even though I do get the concerns with his physical tools and wearing down as the season progressed. But I always bet on instincts when it comes to these guys at the top. I would add Michael Porter to that conversation. But again, it's hard to evaluate him just based on AAU tape and the all-star events that he's played in the past, like Hoop Summit. You got to see more from him at the college level. He plays and he comes back and for the rest of the season shows that high level of two-way ability. If he especially defends, he could easily enter this conversation for me. I kind of have Jaren Jackson, Trey Young, and Michael Porter all tied right behind Luka Doncic. So those are the guys I trust the most.
I want to start with Jaren Jackson Jr. because you brought him up. Obviously, at the beginning of the season and then heading into conference play, Jaren Jackson Jr. was a guy that I felt was going to be somewhere hanging around the late lottery, somewhere where the Bulls were potentially looking at picking. And for the Bulls, not only is there a need for wings, but really there's just a need for everything on this team. So for Jaren Jackson Jr., how high do you think his draft stock could rise? And could the NCAA tournament help him at all? And do you see him kind of finding himself a spot in the top five in this NBA draft once we come to the summer? And are there any guys that you see sliding down that maybe you've had in that top five before?
I definitely think that Jaren could go in the top five. I think he's starting to get the credit he deserves. And we know the NCAA tournament helps guys stock. I mean, it happens every year. So if he does have a great run, he shows more offensive ability. He's allowed to show more offensive ability in the tournament. I could see him rising a little bit, but he's still going to be viewed in like a less ceiling lens as far as compared to Marvin Bagley. DeAndre Ayton is going to go in the top two regardless. So those guys, the NBA covets scoring in the top five traditionally, and that's not something that is Jaren Jackson's expertise, of course. He could fall a little bit just because not all the teams at the top of the draft need a big. So that's going to push somebody down. And again, I think Jaren Jackson probably will suffer a little bit from that just because he doesn't have the high offensive ceiling. But I think the guy most likely to fall is Trey, just because we're talking about traditional draft think, and guys always bet on tools. That's what the NBA is. I mean, they're going to see Muhammad Bamba, 7'9" wingspan, guy who can move relatively well on the perimeter. It's hard to see the advanced tools, athleticism guys in this draft, just because they are so high ceiling falling too far. And that's going to push somebody down. And the safe bet there would be probably Trey Young.
So I'm curious about Trey Young. Obviously, I've watched Trey Young a ton, obviously, because ESPN broadcasts every Oklahoma game, it seems like, over the last 2 months. Watching Trey Young, and I obviously understand that Oklahoma team, he isn't getting much help from any of his teammates. Obviously, you talked about his high usage rate and coming into the Big 12, and that was the one thing that I was curious about, is obviously he came off to a hot start in non-conference play. And I said, you know, the Big 12 is going to be one of the best college basketball conferences this year. And I was curious to see how he played up against ranked competition. Trey Young's ability in the NBA, what do you see that it has? Is there any type of comp? Obviously, the early comps were Steph Curry, which I thought was a little bit too soon for it. But is there any comps out there for Trey Young that you can think of, and how his game is going to translate to the NBA? And is there a certain team in this lottery that you're looking at as far as from an NBA standpoint where you feel like he would fit the best in?
Yeah, I think comp wise, maybe like some kind of median outcome would be Damian Lillard, who can also really pass the basketball. We're talking about Trey. I always start my analysis with the point guards. Can you shoot off the dribble at a high level? And I think Trey can. He has the threat of his shot. That's really going to help him. Even when he struggled shooting in Big 12 play. He has the threat of a shot. Guys like Javon Carter have had to press out on him, and he's gotten by these guys consistently. I don't have a ton of concerns about his athleticism as far as being able to separate off the bounce. He's got an incredible handle. He's shifty. He understands how to play in that regard, and you have to guard him really tight. And in the NBA, that matters maybe even more than being an uber athlete. If you have the threat of your shot and you can open up driving lanes, that's really huge. As far as teams in the lottery that make a lot of sense for him, I mean, everybody's going to say the Magic just because they've needed shooting desperately and they needed a primary ball handler. You could make a lot of arguments. I think the Bulls would be a fantastic fit. I mean, Hoiberg, I'm a big Hoiberg guy. I think he could really optimize Trey, who has not been able to play off the ball very much. He has to do everything for Oklahoma because they don't have any secondary creation. So getting him moving and just utilizing the gravity of his shooting would be big. But you talk about a team like Phoenix, that would make a lot of sense. But you're, that would cap your defensive ceiling. And that's kind of the problem I see with a lot of these teams is, you know, like a, next to a Devin Booker, that gives you the Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum effect where your ceiling as a franchise is capped. And I think that's defensively, that's kind of what I see with the Bulls too. If they're going to build around Zach LaVine, which I mean, they're probably going to, I'm not sure if I would consider that in my calculus, but him and a Trae Young backcourt, that's pretty hard to cover for. And I don't think Lauri Markkanen is good enough defensively to do that unless you really acquire like a high level defensive anchor and like a three man who can really guard multiple positions at a high level, like a Robert Covington.
Yeah, I think that was one another thing too that we were curious about. Obviously, Zach LaVine's defense is not the greatest in the NBA. That was one of the biggest weaknesses when they went and made the trade for Zach LaVine. Adding another Trae Young, and obviously he's got some defensive weaknesses as well. And so combining those two, I know I've had my reservations about it, but I was curious to just understand where he was as a player and how he could transition into an NBA team. Somebody I want to get to, though, because there's been reports by the Chicago Bulls and just rumors around the Bulls team that the front office of John Paxson and Gar Foreman are highly touted on Marvin Bagley. So what can you tell me about Marvin Bagley and the, I guess, your thought process on him that's developed from the beginning of the season and now up into this point? How do you feel about him and what his game can translate to the NBA?
I mean, he's a supreme athlete, one of the best second and third leapers I've seen for a big. Got to see him in person about a year ago at the Les Schwab tournament in Portland. He played against Michael Porter, and he can really jump out of the gym from a standstill. He can elevate over the rim. So you start there. You know, the open court dribbling ability is probably there in grab and go situations. He's really fast. So just as an athlete, he's phenomenal. You know, I just think the fit issues with him are very real as far as being able to. If you play him at the five offensively, I think he can be an Amari Stoudemire type guy and pick and roll, a high level finisher of plays. But then you have that trade off defensively where he's not going to be able to protect the rim. He only has a little bit over a 7 foot wingspan. He's not the sturdiest build guy as far as absorbing contact around the rim. And Duke's defense has been better without him on the floor. Like Wendell Carter is their best defensive player and he still has his flaws. So that goes to show his defensive impact, even at Duke with his athleticism, just the IQ is not there. So that's where I worry about him is I think if you put him in a pick and roll next to Lauri Markkanen on the Bulls, the offense would be very functional, assuming you got a high level kind of playmaker to initiate your sets. I think that's very workable. It's just you're setting a very low ceiling defensively for your front court, and you want your bigs to provide defense. That's kind of what the big position is you got to start your analysis there. And that's why I've always kind of thought, you know, Bagley makes a ton of sense offensively. I get where the Bulls are kind of coming from in that angle, but it's an overall conceptual fit. I think a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr. would make a lot more sense from a team building standpoint.
We're talking to Cole Zwicker here. You can follow him on Twitter at Cole Zwicker. So Cole, I'm looking up and down this NBA mock drafts. I have been for a long time, just kind of trying to look at some of these guys. And obviously at the trade deadline, the Bulls acquired another first round pick from the New Orleans Pelicans. I want to get into some names that you might think might be sleepers towards the back half of this draft. But I have to get your opinion on DeAndre Ayton first. I watched him the other night take on Oregon. And for the first, I would even say for the first 30 minutes of that game, he absolutely dominated on the offensive end. And then it seemed like Oregon figured out how to lock him up for the last 10 minutes. They ended up pulling off the victory against Arizona. Talk to me about DeAndre Ayton. What is the biggest flaw about him? Because I look at that guy and he looks like he is a man playing among child. Like he dominates the boards. He's an offensive freak. Is there worry on the defensive end that it might not translate, that he won't be able to protect the rim that maybe his size says that he could in college? What's the biggest weakness about DeAndre Ayton's game, and what's something that you do love about him?
I think the biggest weakness is his defensive instincts. You just don't know if he can really diagnose plays. He's so athletic. He can really slide powerfully in space. I think he's going to be a plus space defender in the NBA, so that really helps him. But as far as rim protection, it's so hard for these bigs nowadays to diagnose all the different actions, all the different, secondary, like back cuts, all that stuff. They have to really, in the moment, react to plays. And that's something he's not adept at this point, is reacting to drives. He doesn't contest shots at times when he's 3-4 feet away from a weak side standpoint. Like when he's on the ball and he's engaged, he's a really effective defensive player. But when he has to rotate over and all that timing stuff, he's never had to do it before. And it's not instilled into his brain. So that's where I worry a little bit. He doesn't scream like defensive anchor as far as a rim protector, but he can really rebound. And then you look at the overall movement skills are elite. That's where the David Robinson comparisons come in. He's not the same defensive player that David Robinson was, but he moves like that. And that's what makes him so tantalizing. And I get watching him, it's really hard to sift through all the question marks, because you just look at how he dominates and how he moves. And we haven't seen somebody like this in quite some time, as far as somebody that size who can run the floor like a wing and then slide in space. But I think offensively, there's a lot there, a lot of coordination as far as, being able to double spin move quickly, finish. He's a high level finisher just because he's so big. He can carve out space with his frame. But you also look at his offense and say, what does he really do in an elite fashion? Is this somebody who can shoot threes consistently? His form right now is decent. It needs to be tweaked a little bit just because he has a flatter release. Can that extend to NBA three? Can he be a volume 3-point shooter? I don't think so at this juncture. I think he's more of a pick and pop, mid-range guy who can put the ball on the floor a little bit. He can pass functionally out of mid-post sets like a Joel Embiid type, but he doesn't really do anything at an elite level outside of rebound. So when you really parse through all the specific skills, I would definitely bet on this guy. I mean, especially in the right situation, if you can really get him to play hard and engage him on a nightly basis, he's just going to be too big, too fast to not be a presence. But if we're talking about sifting through the top of the draft and who has the elite level skills outside of rebounding, I'm not sure if DeAndre Ayton has that one primary skill that's going to really differentiate him like a Towns. As far as Towns is shooting, that was pretty bankable. Ayton is not that level of shooter. He's not that level of playmaker off the dribble like a Nikola Jokic. So you look at the elite offensive centers in the league, I'm not sure if he can get to that level, but he has a really, really strong foundation. That's what I'll say.
So just quickly, talk to me about Michael Porter Jr. Obviously, the injury put a huge setback into his plans this year with Missouri. He was cleared for basketball activity. And do you expect people to see him in the tournament? And do you expect him to, I guess, at least draw a little bit of buzz coming up to the NBA draft? Obviously, he hasn't played in a game yet. Any concerns with the back injuries? If you're a Bulls fan looking at one of these guys to maybe slide down to the Bulls if they end up somewhere between 6 and 8 in this draft. I felt like Michael Porter might be one of those guys that might slide a little bit just because of that injury. Can you talk to me a little bit about Michael Porter's game and anything that you have there that you might reserve a little bit of, have a little bit of a reservation for and say, you know what, there might be other guys and other options that you feel a little bit more comfortable with? Or do you say that Michael Porter still could come back healthy and be a fantastic player in the NBA?
I definitely think he can be a fantastic player. I mean, we're talking about a 6'10 guy who can fluidly handle the ball, shoot off the dribble at a high level. And I think that's where the NBA is going, is the guys who can really shot make off the bounce. You need probably at least two of those guys to contend for a title. And there's just not a lot of 6'10 guys that come around the draft that can do that stuff. His shot, he can pull up on a dime from 30 feet. I saw him a lot at high school just because he played about 15 minutes from my house. And that guy is really adept there already. He's a good athlete. And I think that's going to translate. Those aspects are really alluring. I think there are concerns, of course, about the back. I'm not a doctor, and you really have to be comfortable with his medical in the evaluation process when he goes to private workouts. And the thing with him is he can actually control his destiny a little bit, because he can sift through the teams and be like, I don't want to play you know, in Atlanta, for instance, or something. I don't know why you'd say that, but if he did, he could withhold his medical information, and that makes it a lot more testy for a team in the top five of this class to really invest high capital in. So if he wanted to go to the Bulls and the Bulls were at six, he could, in theory, withhold all his medical information for the Bulls, and that would, you know, increase the chances of him falling that far. But overall, I think we probably will see him this year. I don't really know. That's like that's a big question right now is, will he play? Does he need to play? If he doesn't play, he has no chance of going number one. So if he wants to put his name in that kind of hat, he has to play, because the talent is just too strong for him not to show at least a little bit in college. But if he defends, if we see him play and he shows the instincts defensively, and we see any kind of playmaking in the half court as far as running a pick and roll, handling in tighter spaces, he's uber talented. Like, he came into the draft by most as, at worst, probably the second best player in the class. So there's a ton of upside there. And executives have already seen him a ton in like Hoop Summit, so they're really familiar with him. And I think that if he shows the skills that he's shown on lower levels, he's going to go really high.
I'm curious, you brought up that interesting point, withholding your medical information from teams while you're in the NBA draft. Is there anybody that you can think of off the top of your head that this has happened with in past drafts before that ended up turning out and maybe falling in the draft farther than they thought, went to a team and ended up being great, or ended up being productive for an NBA team? Because I find that very interesting. If you're a player in Michael Porter's situation, and there's a team that maybe you don't want to go to, or there's a team that you specifically want to go to, you can play your odds in this way. Is there anybody in the past that you can think that has done this before?
I'm not sure about the high level talent as far as like a guy who ended up being an all-star. I'm sure there are examples. I know last year we had that instance with Dennis Smith and the Knicks about not supplying all the medical information allegedly, and he fell an extra spot. They were thinking about taking him at the eight spot. He, of course, fell to nine. I can't name any specific instances. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that gets leaked. Sometimes we don't know how much is reliable or not, but just in theory, I think that does probably happen more than we think.
So let's talk about some of these guys that are sleepers in this NBA draft. Obviously, like I said, the Bulls are going to have somewhere in the lottery. We're hoping, all Bulls fans out there are hoping, that this lottery pick ends up being somewhere in the top five. But on top of that, the Bulls own the Pelicans pick this year. And as of right now, if we stayed right where the Pelicans were right now, the Bulls would have the 21st pick also in this draft. So can you talk to me about some sleepers in this draft, players that you like a ton in college and that you feel like can be back end of the draft productive players that maybe Bulls fans should pay a little bit more attention to, somebody that they can grab maybe in the early 20s or late teens that maybe can be a productive player, maybe that other people or other teams that might overpass these guys, anybody that comes off the top of your head or that you have on a list that are somewhere between that late teens and early 20s that people aren't really talking about?
Yeah, it just really depends on who declares. There are two underrated freshmen right now, DeAndre Hunter of Virginia and Zaire Smith of Texas Tech. Both those guys I have in my lottery, and they're both considered mostly 2019 guys. But if they do declare, I think these guys are awesome picks in the late teens, early 20s. I would take them a little bit higher than that. DeAndre Hunter, 6'8 with a 7'2, 7'3 wingspan, probably the hardest archetype in the league, or one of the hardest to find right now as far as those bigger wings who can defend, you know, 1 through 4, but really those combo forward scoring types. And he has more of a face-up game than he gets credit for. I think he's pretty skilled. He can shoot a little bit off the dribble. So DeAndre Hunter, I mean, he's just a really valuable player. If you haven't got a chance to watch him on Virginia, he's probably been their best player, you know, in conference play, and he is on the best team arguably in the country. So it speaks to what he is and his impact on that team. Zaire Smith of Texas Tech, 6'5". We don't know his wingspan, probably going to come in around 6'9-ish. Freak athlete. He's a functional athlete. I think he's kind of what people thought that Hamidou Diallo would be. So he's really high level there as far as his ability to play in a team construct. And you think about him on the Bulls, pairing him with somebody like Chris Dunn, that's just a lot of defensive ability, athleticism, just overwhelming opposing backcourts. We don't know about the shot yet, but it looks somewhat projectable. So those two guys stand out. Two other guys, one of which probably will declare, we're not really sure yet, Troy Brown of Oregon, another 6'7 wing with about a 6'11 wingspan, just a really high-level playmaker. He played high school point guard in Las Vegas, and he has the ball skills, kind of makes the extra pass. He knows how to play the game. We don't know about the shot yet either. He kind of has a little bit of an Evan Turner feel if he doesn't shoot, but I think he'll shoot better than that. So he's a guy that I think could really fit well in Hoiberg's system. He just really knows how to play, can move the ball. He's unselfish and he has the ball skills to play. And I'm really big on team defense this year. I just think that's where the NBA is going as well, as far as having guys who are 6'6", 6'7", who have the requisite length that really know how to play in a team construct. You just can't afford to have these hiccups and these lapses off ball anymore and give up, you know, easy 3-point looks. That's where the league is going. And, you know, Troy Brown has that team defense. One more guy who's a junior, so just to provide an upperclassman, Jacob Evans from Cincinnati is another wing, 6'6", you know, really smooth jump shot. I think he's a really good bet to shoot with that one motion release. And he's another high level team defender who can even protect the rim at 6'6" a little bit. He knows where to be. That Cincinnati defense is one of the best in the country. So he's just somebody to look out for. He might even go in the second round, honestly. We've seen wings that are upperclassmen get pushed down, like Sterling Brown last year, who I was really high on and is playing a valuable role in Milwaukee. So I'm not even sure if the Bulls would consider guys like this in this range. I push guys like this up. I have Colin Sexton, for instance, at 19 on my board. So it's pretty unconventional compared to traditional kind of approach. So those are just some of the guys I would look wings, because I think that that is where this draft has value in that range.
Yeah, the Bulls for sure. I would say if there's a one need outside of their lottery pick, which obviously the Bulls said that they're going to take the best available talent. And for that, the Bulls need everything. But if I had to point to one thing that the Bulls desperately need, is wing help. And we talked to Matt and I, my co-host, we talked a little bit about maybe possible trade options. If the Bulls decide that there isn't a forward or there isn't a wing player in this draft that they do like, maybe they can go out and get something young. Talk to me about players that are sliding on your draft board. You obviously just mentioned Colin Sexton, and that intrigues me that he falls on your board somewhere to the late teens. Anybody else on this draft, especially in the first round, that is sort of sliding on your draft boards, or guys that you would maybe avoid specifically for a Fred Hoiberg offense and a Chicago Bulls team that already has guys like Lauri Markkanen playing, and he's going to be a staple at that four position? And I don't know if the Bulls are too curious about mixing him up and trying to move him to the five a little bit. Anybody that is sliding down these boards that obviously was highly touted, that's sliding down for you now, that you would maybe avoid if you're the Chicago Bulls coming up to the summer?
I think probably Kevin Knox of Kentucky stands out. I think he's going to have to play the four in the NBA to have value as kind of that stretch, you know, combo forward archetype, but I'm not sure about his ball skills. His athleticism, I don't think, is fantastic. And if you can't really afford to play him at the four, he's not really a high level field guy. Like, I think he has some elements to Kyle Kuzma as far as his shooting ability. I think he's going to be able to shoot pretty well in the future, and that's a pretty bankable skill. But the, you know, attacking off the bounce, he doesn't have a lot of burst. He has a floater game with soft touch, but he, again, is just not a ball mover type. He doesn't really know how to play yet in a team construct. And when I look at the Bulls, I think that's a necessity for them, is getting guys who can really do that, move the ball and have playmaking attributes. And if you're going to play Lowry at the four and not swing him to the five as much, I'm not sure if a Lowry, Kevin Knox front court pairing as far as defensively would be tenable. But that's just somebody who I don't think fits that well. I've moved him down to 21 on my board. I think that a lot of guys have him still in the top 12, top 13, because you're banking on the upside. I'm not sure how much upside there really is, even though he's starting to play a little bit better now and he's incredibly young. I just don't know what he really brings to the table outside of shooting and potentially average-ish defense due to his size. So I'd say him, and then just to reference Colin Sexton quickly, because I think that some Bulls fans probably have some intrigue there with his pairing next to maybe Chris Dunn in the backcourt with Zach LaVine. It's just hard because he doesn't really do anything that well right now except for draw fouls. I think his athleticism is a little overrated as far as his vertical pop, his burst. I think it's fine. I don't think it's special. And he's just not a playmaker. He's not a point guard right now that creates for others. He has simplistic reads. I don't really trust his drive and kick vision yet. And the defense hasn't been there either. So I always, if you're not going to be an incredible athlete at point guard, I want you to be able to shoot at a high level. And he's just not showing that. His shot has kind of regressed. His form isn't the most fluid. So I think for me, of the most notable guys in this draft, Colin Sexton and Kevin Knox have tumbled the most for me.
This is all really great information. And I know our Bulls fans, especially the ones that have tuned out college basketball this season, even with the tank going on here in Chicago, a lot of these names coming up, the draft and the tournament especially, is going to be a chance for a lot of these guys to get some more exposure, extend exposure from maybe fans from the NBA that haven't paid attention all season long. One other person that we didn't touch on that I want to get to quickly before we wrap things up is Mohamed Bamba. What do you think about Mohamed Bamba's game? Because I think outside of DeAndre Ayton and some of these other guys like Marvin Bagley, I felt like Mohamed Bamba, if he had slipped, if the Bulls end up between 5 and 8, and that's a guy that slips to you, I felt like just his size, his length, his ability, and his age too. I think pairing him alongside Lauri Markkanen, it just is super intriguing. I've only watched a few games of him, but can you talk a little bit about Mohamed Bamba's game? Maybe some limitations that he's going to have when he comes to the NBA, and what kind of player maybe he can be in the NBA 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line.
Yeah, he's one of those high variance players in the draft. Like, his upside is pretty clearly obvious as a defensive anchor who can really protect the rim. I mean, we see the Gobert comparisons and they're valid. I mean, if he can add the requisite girth and a little bit more athleticism as far as jumping ability, it's there. Like, he's not a high level anticipatory guy as far as making reads as, you know, your primary rim protector, but he doesn't need to be that. He has a high margin for error as far as with his length. I get the intrigue. I mean, if he hits, he's going to return top five value in this class for sure. If you have the patience and if you have a workout regimen that really puts him in a situation where you can add muscle to the right places, like Gobert doesn't get enough credit for how much of a worker he is. He really put in the necessary work on his body, his lower body, to be able to anchor a defense. And that's kind of where Bamba's upside is tied to, it's mostly physical. If he can add 30 pounds and retain some ability, he's going to be an impactful player. He's super smart. He's really intelligent kid. And I think his offense is probably a little bit better than he's been able to showcase at Texas, which is one of the worst situations offensively in the country, in my opinion, with their guard play. They don't have spacing. So every time he dives to the rim, the two wing guys on defense are collapsing on him. There's just not a lot of space to operate. He can handle the ball a little bit, shoot off the dribble some. I'm not sure if that stuff's going to translate, but he's more functionally skilled than he's probably given credit for. But he also has a higher risk factor because you could be looking at a Hashim Thabeet part two. You could be looking at an iteration of Hassan Whiteside, which is a good player. But in this class, is that a top five player? I don't think so, probably. So there's, it just comes down to your philosophy and your risk factor as a franchise. His fit next to Lowry conceptually at its peak is really outstanding as far as being able to really anchor for everybody else and, you know, dive to the rim in the right setting. It could be that he's, you know, a backup center. And that's kind of the variance we're talking about with him. I think the shooting stuff, people say Gobert, the jump shot, that's a little overrated. I mean, we can't just project everybody to shoot the ball just because they can shoot a little bit in college. Like, I don't know if he ever profiles as like a high pick profile pick and pop guy. Like, he's not Lowry. He's not even in the same stratosphere, of course. So you can't really project something like that. But in theory, it's possible if everything goes right for him, he could be Gobert with a jump shot. It's just, that's obviously highly unlikely. But when you start getting into a certain point in this draft, there's not a lot of guys with ceilings like that.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about, getting maybe, if he ended up on the Bulls, getting him and Lauri Markkanen on some type of Anthony Davis diet where they just add muscle together. Like, you look at Giannis's transformation, the way his body went. You even brought up Rudy Gobert. Man, if you could get those two guys on the same plan and bulk them up 20, 30 pounds of muscle, that would be an insane back. That would be insane front court for the Bulls to have. Finally, I wanted to wrap up with this question. Obviously, the buzz around college basketball has been about this FBI investigation, this scandal that's going on. Sean Miller had just made statements not too long ago, a couple days ago, on this whole situation. Just give me your take on this, everything that's happened with the names that have come out, the players that are being paid, anything that you think the NCAA is going to do to try and change things, change up rules, or anything the NBA might do to try and step in and make a change for these players, not only maybe lifting that age limit of where guys can go into the G League if they decide to pursue something to be a competitor to the NCAA. I don't necessarily think that's a good idea, but what are your thoughts on this FBI scandal, this investigation that's going and sweeping around the NCAA, and how does that play a factor into some of these prospects that's names have been included into this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to factor in too much for these kids. This is something that everybody kind of expected it was going on. It's just finally coming to the surface. It's, yeah, again, it's just really not that surprising. I've heard stories behind the scenes about, you know, kids taking money, and that's just the reality situation. I don't know how it's really fixed unless the NBA is just like, we want these kids at a lower age in our system, you know, do away with the one and done, make it like you can come out of high school, and then maybe if you go to college, you have to stay for 2 years. You could see a rule like that arising. The G League element of this is just ridiculous. Like Mitchell Robinson can't play, is barred from playing in the G League this year because of a rule there. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's not pro player, and it's like the teams are kind of cutting their legs out from under them with a rule like that. Everybody wants to see a guy like Mitchell Robinson play basketball, and you want to be able to profile him. He's got a super high ceiling in this class. So there's just a lot of stuff within the framework of the NCAA, the G League, and the NBA that don't make sense for a lot of the parties. But I do think that you'll probably see the league go to that old format of coming out of high school, even though it's just it's really tough when you talk about from a scouting perspective. We came into the year, you know, with point guards like Colin Sexton, Trayvon Duval is a guy we don't even talk about anymore on Duke. And he was a top 10 guy in this class, most boards. And now he's outside the top 40. So you talk about a franchise drafting in the top 10. If you take Trayvon Duval out of high school, like that could set you back 5 years. So there's no easy answer. I'm for the college guys coming into the NBA, getting paid sooner. I think from kind of an efficacy standpoint, like I want that for them, but it just makes the whole process that much more complex. But just, I guess, more succinctly answering your question, it's not surprising. At least players getting paid, I don't think it's going to impact them at all with NBA guys. Everybody kind of knew what was going on. It was more just hush hush, and now it's coming to the surface.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because if you're anybody that watches college basketball, pays any attention at all to some of these prospects and these programs, it's not surprising at all any of these players are getting paid and which players are going to which programs. It's just more funny that it's come to the surface now, and we're seeing a lot of these schools where we've said for a long time that, oh, players are getting paid here, they're getting incentivized here, and it's coming to the surface now. Cole, this has been fantastic. I got to say that your knowledge about the college basketball game and about the NBA draft has been fantastic. I hope our listeners got as much information as I did out of this talk. It's been fantastic. Remember, you can follow Cole's Wicker on Twitter at Cole's Wicker. He's a writer and co-founder of The Step In. Fantastic website. All your college basketball analysts, NBA draft needs there. Follow him on Twitter. Cole, this has been a fantastic conversation. I'm looking forward to the NCAA tournament, watching these prospects that you've talked about. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We want to thank our guest, Cole's Wicker, writer and co-founder of The Step In, for joining us. Fantastic conversation. I hope you got as much out of that conversation as I did. I learned a lot about prospects that I haven't watched over the course of this year, and I hope you did too as well, heading up into the NCAA tournament this weekend coming up. All of that and so much more in this interview. We want to thank Cole again. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Use our new text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Send all your texts and voicemails. Leave those for us at that number. Save that number in your phone at Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. But for Jordan and Cole's Wicker, our guest, we are out. Have a great weekend, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.